Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Open your hearts. Loosen your butts. It's time for Couples Therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's Couples Therapy, Couples Therapy.
Everyone, welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Andy.
And I'm Naomi.
We are a real life couple.
A real life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, we answer a couple different questions
from a couple different listeners.
Hell yes.
Andy and I are coming to you. We have had a 2-episode day. We recorded 2 episodes today, you guys, even before we're bringing you the beauty that is Paul Scheer. And so the fact that Andy and I...
One of those episodes, cursed beyond belief.
You'll hear about the curse later. I don't like to bring up La Llorona in public. Was she a witch? I don't know.
But we said Macbeth out loud. Oh, okay. We didn't call it the Scottish play, and that's what happened.
And that's what ruined us. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say that it's, you know, considering we've done 2 episodes in one day, the fact that we still like each other and can sit in front of these microphones, mm-hmm. looking at each other, mm-hmm. and still be open is a goddamn miracle. Because after 2 episodes, I'm done talking to everybody.
Well, do you know what I think is powering us, Naomi? We're being courted right now. We're being courted by a company.
That's true.
We are being asked to provide content for a little platform called OnlyFans.
You guys, I can't seriously.
This is true, but I can't say it with a straight face.
OnlyFans, reach out to couplestherapypod@gmail.com, where you can also send your relationship questions. And they were like, come join us, be here for us. We think you could really build a following.
Right. Well, first of all, they're not asking us to do sex stuff.
No. They're trying to go quote unquote straight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, well, I've read about this. Apparently, what these companies do is they make a mint on the backs of sex workers, mm-hmm. and then they discard them, cut off their source of income as they pivot to try to be quote unquote more respectable.
Sick. They don't know what I want to do on that site. Saying that
I think contacting a famously sex neutral sex negative couple,
knew what they were doing, actually. Yeah. They were like, actually, you know what, if we really want to pivot, we should go to these people where they're in love and the woman is sex negative. And I was like, fair. You keep it clean.
I have not responded to them yet, but I think no.
Would you guys watch our OnlyFans?
I don't even know. First of all, I don't know what we do. B, I don't want to be part of them destroying the livelihoods of like thousands of sex
workers.
Can
I please have fun talking about what our OnlyFans would be? Jesus. He's so literal sometimes.
I just want to make that. Now let's have fun. I just want to be like.
OnlyFans would be behind the scenes footage of Andy loading the dishwasher. You would also get to see the cats on the couch, uh-huh. and Mabel gnawing on a bully stick, its own fandom.
What if I read comic books out loud?
Okay, think about that. How much would you pay? $20, $30, $50.
What would you pay if I read Cy Spurrier's Way of X starring Nightcrawler out loud to you?
You're obsessed with Nightcrawler. He brought him up twice today.
Did I really?
Yes.
Well, that's embarrassing. But, because I want to write that character. And Cy Spurrier, I've been wanting to write that character for a long time. And he's writing him right now and doing such a good job that I'm like, damn, I don't know
he
if
did
I,
it.
I don't
he
know. Yeah,
did
he
it.
Did it. Like, it's one of those things where, like,
I know that feeling.
You have that kind of thing, like, you want to do, and then someone does it, and they, like, fucking kill it. And you're like, shit, well.
Yeah, I don't.
You know, so what else could we do? Oh, what about, hey, is this cool, Naomi?
What?
I will make videos of me cleaning the house.
Wow. Okay. Fully clothed.
Vacuuming the stairs.
In a basketball short and a house shoe. We love that. That really has opportunity for sensuality as well.
Yeah, I guess. Hey, look, I'm not going to kink shame anyone if that's your thing.
It's not even a kink.
Yeah, if you like, you get off on watching people clean.
But what makes it a kink and not just like a fun interest? Or is kink, because kink for me, there's something about that word that automatically connotes like dirtiness.
Mm. I think it gets you going.
So kink is anything that gets you going.
Yeah. And like the stuff that you and I as pretty vanilla folk doesn't get us.
So my kink is men apologizing. You see what I'm saying? Like, yes. Would you call that a kink?
I thought you were about to say menopause.
Menopause is my kink. Wow.
I get off on hot flashes.
You know what gets me hot? Flashes. That's it.
If someone has to adjust the thermostat, ooh, baby.
Ooh, baby. Adjust that thermostat to 65 degrees. Okay, we're off the rails.
Oh, yeah. So we already said who today's wonderful guest is. This is so exciting for me. Paul Scheer.
Paul Scheer, you guys.
You and I met at UCB. He had already left. Like, Human Giant had already.
Yeah, but like, you know, he was obviously someone who we both knew as like baby wannabe comedians in the improv scene. He definitely, it is that sense of like, you know, freshman to senior, right? When you're talking to him where it's like,
oh, God,
I want Paul to like me, even though it's like, I don't do improv. I don't run in the same circles as this person. And yet I'm like, am I making you laugh?
Him and Rob had us on their Twitch show. And that was where I felt like,
I know,
like,
you
oh
were freaking.
God.
It was a freaking weekend.
But I thought we did really well. I thought we were fun.
I thought so too. Now, you guys, if you haven't seen Paul Scheer, if you don't know what we're talking about and why we're geeking, Paul Scheer, he has the podcast Unspooled. How Did This Get Made? You can see him on Black Monday on Showtime.
Season 3 airing now.
Airing now. Him and June Diane Raphael, his wife, power couple extraordinaire. Also, he made the shows Human Giant, as we said, NTFSDUV. I don't know. It was on Adult Swim.
It was really
good.
It was
funny.
It was funny.
He's just out here giving us the content, giving us the hilarity, and actually being a kind king.
Yeah.
So this is a real good episode. Before we get to it, though, as always, I got to plug my shows, baby. So by the time this episode drops, you can come see me in LA July 14th and July 15th at the Comedy Chateau in North Hollywood. And I'm going to tell you, as someone who recently bombed at the Comedy Chateau, I'm going to really need my audience, okay? I'm going to need you guys there to overpower the people who are not having me.
To be fair to Naomi, she did a show at 10 p.m., that gave free weed and edibles to everyone.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's
not good for a high audience.
That's not. I would say yes. You it didn't go well, but I wouldn't like, put it totally on you.
But I would also I would like to stack the house.
Yes.
So if you can come through LA, I believe it's $10, the 2-drink minimum. You can go to my link tree for tickets. Then also New York, babies. You know I love you. You know I'm coming for you. Finally, July 27th at 8 p.m. and August 1st at 7 p.m. Both shows at Littlefield in Brooklyn, okay? Nice. You can see me at Littlefield. That first show, we got Christy Cielo, Shalay was Sharp, Pat Regan. That second show, we got Sydney Washington, Maron Kagani, and Joe Firestone. I mean, either way,
stacked.
It's stacked, honey. I be stacking them lineups, dough. So you have really two great options. If you, like, aren't hearing enough from me all the time, you can also listen to my podcast, I Love a Lifetime Movie. If you're not hearing enough from Andy, you can listen to his other podcast, Beginnings.
Oh, yeah, episode 500's coming up.
Episode 500. Andy's been in a relationship with this podcast as long as he's been in a relationship with me, pretty much. So this is huge for everyone
That's
involved.
True. I started Beginnings
shortly
like
before we met.
3 months before you and I got together.
Yep, so this is his second partner. So if you would just support those endeavors, but I'm done telling you everything, because quite honestly, this talk with Paul was so fucking fun. I think you're going to love it. So Andy, do us the honors.
Roll it.
It was very Friday Night Lights to me.
Yeah.
That was very much Coach Taylor coming through.
Yeah. I felt it. I felt like I was Saracen.
Yeah. Big hearts, loose butts, can't lose.
So, Paul, you are in a pod with a family, the yes. child of which, Karsik, a little delicate Karsik boy.
Yes, I have had, so I've had this issue when I drive my son to preschool with his friend who is in our pod, and we have a great relationship with these people. He gets car sick with me. He doesn't get car sick with my wife. He doesn't get car sick with his parents. But when he is with me, he gets car sick. And it doesn't matter what car I drive. It doesn't matter what we do. Like, I have one car that has a TV screen. No big deal. And and don't let him watch TV. That's totally fine. All right, great. So we're in a car today without a TV. He's not watching TV. Pukes all over. And there is something to be said for... I love being a parent. I love kids. But when I will say that my Achilles heel in children is puking. My own kids, anyone's kids. Like, if it's happening, my instinct is, let's throw away the bed. Like, my kid puked in his bed one time. I'm like, get it all out of here. Like, let's just destroy it. Like, I literally, like, my first time my son threw up, he threw up in, like, we had a basket of books. And he just threw up there. I was like, I'm not even looking through it. I don't care. Oh, no. It's all going in the trash. It's all
burn them
like
all.
I'm just like, it's all going in the trash. And I will say to any parents out there, if you've not done it, invest in one of those sheets that you put on the bed that even if they puke or pee or whatever they do there, you could just take that off and throw it away. It's like, it's a $20
plastic, like a plastic sheet.
Yes, but it has like a nice top to it. So it's smooth. Ooh. It's like not cottony, but I guess it's cotton on the top. So that has saved my life because now, like, it doesn't happen often. Kids don't puke that much. Maybe once every 2 years, once a year. I don't know. But when I know that that's on there, I'm like, everything goes to the garbage. But today, my little buddy, cute as can be, he's the cutest kid. I love him very much. He's very cute. But he puked. I took him out of the car. We're in the preschool parking lot. All the parents are around. And this kid is wearing his mask. Very safe, you know, COVID times, and starts vomiting through his mask.
We started talking about it before we were recording.
Yeah,
and that detail was not there.
Saved it for the pod.
Through, yeah,
the professional
saved, through yeah, the mask, of course.
As if it's like a cheap horror movie.
It was. Well, here's the thing: I was putting a hoodie on my son. And I just heard it at first. I heard a grrr. And I looked over and I see it like exploding from the mask. And I'm like, oh no. And I'm also in this zone where like I have to now get to where I need to get to after I drop them off too.
Right.
So I'm like, okay. So immediately I'm like, okay, how bad is this puke? What's going on here? Okay, I'm looking at it. And I'm like, I'm trying to judge it. And then it's like, blah. And I'm like, okay, let's take off the mask. I take off the mask. He's puking. And then my son's like, hey, why are you doing that? And like, he's like, don't do it near my lunchbox. I'm like, okay. And kids and parents are walking by. And then I feel the shame of like, no one knows the relationship here. So now am I the parent who has like the puke? Am I trying to like hoist my puking kid off at school? Because I think some parents do that. It's like, just pretend that you're not sick.
Holding this kid, by the way, as if like it's a statue, like you are holding it and the puke is flying.
Oh,
vomit. Like it's the Exorcist.
I don't even know how to describe it because it was like he was shooting out like almost a protective rim around where our car was and our area was. So parents are like walking by, avoiding
the
puke.
How did he have this much in him?
It was only 8:30.
This is preschool and it's not, what did he have for breakfast? At most, half a bagel?
Half a bagel, a yogurt. So he pukes. He's like, I want to go home. I'm like, I'll take you home. I send my kid in. Not even paying attention to my kid. I'm like, you get in there. Let me take you back. And the whole way home, I'm like, okay, you know, I want to make sure I'm going very slow. I'm talking to him, being very calm with him, just trying to make him feel at ease because I know that, you know, it's upsetting. Now, also, I also realize I don't have like paper towels in my car. Mm-hmm. I don't have like that kind. Like, it reminds me all the time. Like, I need to carry like things to wipe up.
Wipes.
Yeah. I have wipes, but wet wipes on wet puke is disgusting. It's like it's more wet.
Right.
And I need like towels. I need like a bar towel. Like I need one, a bar rescue towel or something. And so we're going home and everything is going well. And I feel like he's calm. And he's like, I just think I was car sick. And I was like, yes, because this has happened before. You probably are just car sick. And I'm bringing him home. And by the way, I'm bringing him home to his mom, who is absolutely amazing, lovely woman, who is ready to give birth. Like yesterday. She is also like, I'm sure looking forward to this like 3 hour window that she gets with no kids. And I'm like, knock, knock, knock. Guess who's back? Your puking son. And so I bring him back and he says to me, we're about to literally turning onto his block. He's like, this is taking a long time. I go, we're getting there as quick as possible. Blah, blah. And then he starts puking in the car. More pukes. This is the fourth puke in less than 20 minutes.
This is too much puke.
Fourth. And it's all over the car. And I smell it and I see it. And I'm like, okay, hold on. And then I'm trying to get him out of the car, but it won't stop. It's like, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, okay. And I still am in this paper towel situation where I'm like, oh, God. And then he's like looking at himself like Superman and Superman 2, where he sees blood for the first time. He's like looking down his hands like, oh, and he just starts flicking it. Like, you know, like if you got like some caught on your hand
off.
And so like now like puke particles are just like flying like ceiling, side, everything. And the other and not to even drill it in more, but all these kids are in car seats. So it's not like just cleaning down a seat. It's like getting in and belts,
crevice,
and buckles.
Crevices.
And, yeah. A lot of gross stuff. And when I dropped him off, I brought him to his mom. I felt terrible about bringing him to his mom. But thank God, there was a man outside of her house that was doing mobile car washing. And never had I had a moment where like I feel like a sign from God. It was just like, here he was. I was like, sir, I'm sorry. This kid just vomited all over my car. And I'm like, I'm embarrassed to even say it because I'm like, you're not going to want to clean my car. And this man, Kendrick, took out his ear pods or whatever, and he was like, oh, puke? Yeah, no problem. I got this. And I was like, oh, you are the best. Like, I love Kendrick. So
Pulls out a flamethrower.
Yeah. He was like, let me get that seat out of there right now. And I'm like, we got the seat out together. And then you don't want to, like, it's just gross. It's just a gross.
It's
gross.
Bio-waste. It is bio-waste. Yes. You are, that is not your kid. So it's even
not my
more
kid.
Bio-waste.
And by the way, when it is my kid, I have the same, like, it's like, I just want it all out. I want it all out. Like, I have a big thing, and I'm sorry, I'm derailing this, but I will now. I'm like in my puke world, where my wife. I have a very big thing where I'm like, I made my mom did it with me, but when you're sick like that and you're puking, my son got sick a little while like this with puke. My instinct is put a trash can by their bed, get garbage bags out, do whatever you need to do, right? Because you don't want it in there. And my wife's thing is like, let's bring him to another carpeted surface. So she's like, all right, he puked in the bed. He puked in his bed. Let's bring him to our bed. And now he puked in our bed. Okay, let's bring him to our floor. Now he's puking on the carpet. Now let's bring him over. And I'm like, no, 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 no. I was like, we need to do this. This is where we got to be like army. Like we have to be like, no, it's not about comfort here. It's about, it's about us protecting the amount of meth. Like, yeah, so, yeah. So my wife and I butt heads about that a lot.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's containment. And it's just like, one spot, plastic all over the floor, and be like, just try to angle yourself towards it.
Exactly, yeah.
Were you like this before children? Did anything change? Because I'm curious, because like, I'm very much of the mind where I don't like the idea that I have a body, and I don't like the idea that I have a body that produces
anything,
things
really.
From either end, right?
I just don't
like the idea of it. Look, this is tied into lots of mortality stuff where I
sure.
I really just want to be this like eternal mental spirit mind thing. This Cartesian mind
orb.
This orb. That's what I desire to be.
I
this bodiless
love
thing
this.
That does not produce brown clumps from either direction. Right? And they're like, but with the animals, then like, obviously this is different. I'm not gonna try to compare children and our pets.
Please do. Because I have a theory on this as well. As a animal owner and a child owner, I have theories on both. So go ahead.
When the animals produce something, it doesn't necessarily disgust me. And I don't know what the difference is between this kind of like philosophical mindset or this like just desire. I guess it's more like for me, it's just a
so
desire
you feel shame
forever.
In your own mess. Yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just like
absolutely
a shame shield envelops me.
I love that.
But it's like, I'm so not like, because I grew up only child with just my mom. Mm-hmm. I grew up like very talking about bodies. It wasn't hippie, but it was just like, we're both wit girls, right? And so like, if stuff happened to me, I would be like, what's this? What's happening? You know, whatever. And it was easy, and there was no dad to tiptoe around.
Well, so I'm an only child too, and I feel like, yeah, I'm like, I have no shame over what I produce. I would say, and maybe I'm embarrassed to admit this, sometimes there's pride in in what I produce. Look, I have to embrace all parts of myself, but there are some moments where I'm like, all right, that was either exceptionally disgusting or impressively large or something, or whatever it is, you know. So I don't have any shame about it. I never did. I think what it is, like, I've wiped so many butts now, right? And I've seen my wife in moments where I'm sure she like wouldn't want me to see her, and I have an amazing way of wiping that from my memory. Like, I don't I know I have, but I can't remember a thing about it. And by the way, she's seen me be absolutely disgusting as well. So I hope that we wipe those moments from our minds. But yeah, puke is like, I don't know why puke is like my Achilles heel. It's my only one. Like, if you shit on the floor, like, I would be, I'm wiping butts. I'm wiping butts all the time. I am not even only wiping butts, but sometimes I am squatting at the base of a toilet, having a conversation, and the way that their legs are open, it's almost like a vent going right to my nose. So, like, I've been in it. I've been in that world. I've seen it all. I've seen it. I've seen too much. But it doesn't bother me. I think it just, puke seems unruly to me. I don't know what it is. It seems insurmountable. I guess diarrhea and puke are both insurmountable things.
Yes.
I see that.
But puke goes in places that you don't want it to go. Like, I feel like that's the tricky part about it. Like, I don't know where puke is going to land. Poop,
oh,
diarrhea.
I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, that often lands in the toilet. Like,
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, unless, you know, honey, fun fact to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, when you start Lexapro, it can happen to you. You will have a sharding moment. And you want to just hope you're at home, like I was. Because that had never happened to me in my life. And it was like literally day two Lexapro.
Ooh,
I'm sitting in the house and I was like, and it was great because you weren't home. So I also felt like an extra blessing that I was alone in it. And then I was just able to, like, run and then, like, put everything in the washing machine so that by the time you came home, you didn't, like, I was like, there's no sign of it. He doesn't know.
That's
Is
amazing.
That in the antidepressant commercial? Is there?
They really
By the way,
put
that
it
would be
there.
Great. By the way, I'm not, like, I've had some shitting the bed moments once I got terrible food. I've definitely gone in that moment. But you see, where you and I are differ is I'm not washing any of that shit. I'm getting a garbage bag. I'm almost putting myself in a garbage bag. Everything, I never want to see it again. I don't want to clean it. I don't need it. I don't ever need this in my life. I don't want to get in there with a brush and go to town. No, thank you. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Those are those human giant residuals.
Exactly. Yes. You could be throwing
you,
it.
That gives you.
Throw it. Get that out. By the way, I was like, it was so funny. I was talking to somebody about the way that, like, these things work. The people, like, not that this is like a big deal, but you make a show, you do a thing, and people assume, like, oh, if someone rents it on iTunes, like, that $1.99, that you're gonna get that $1.99. I will say I don't know who needs to hear it. That's not the case for anything. Like, I remember Human Giant came out in 2005, I think, or somewhere around there. And we were, like, one of the only, like, iTunes was, like, a novel thing. Like, video on iTunes, like, you'd get a show. And it was, like, I remember, like, downloading Lost. It looked better on there, you know, whatever it was. And, like, we were the number one show on it. And you would think at some point, well, there would be a check coming to us. Like, oh, iTunes money. Nope. Because there's nothing to do. If they just have a file and then someone's paying $2, like, the rate of return should be giant on that. Nothing has transpired. You didn't put in a case. No, you don't see any of that.
Not to get too far into this talk, but is it because that was before the writer's strike, before they negotiated digital?
Well, I mean, if you want to get into, like, the nitty gritty of this, I will say this. I will eliminate names. I was at a WGA meeting. Love the Writers Guild, great organization. And they were talking about writers residuals. And I'm trying to figure out how to take out all the
avoid
specifics.
Names.
Yeah. So someone gets up in the room and goes, uh-huh. "Hi, I'm so and so. I created this show, which is the most popular show on this streaming service. I see $1,000 a year from that."
Holy.
And he was like, "So just so you know, like everyone here in this room, that you're going like." If you're at my level where I'm getting, that's as much as I'm seeing. So like right. I'm at the high end of nothing. So it was interesting to be like, yeah, the most successful person in the room is not making money. And then everyone else below him is like, my show gets 250,000 people to watch. And I think 15 people in Canada once saw it. Like, I want my residuals. It's like, it's not happening. They'll come to your house in pennies. It'll be like those old letters you got when you were a kid, like the Save the Children, where they had two pennies taped inside of it. Like
one dime and a bunch of return postage stickers.
Yeah.
So listeners, subscribe to all of our Patreons.
We need our Patreons.
To Paul's Twitch. Yeah.
By the way, I did, and I will say one other thing about this, which is even wilder. When I did this thing for Paramount, Rob Hubel and I did this thing called Crash Test, which was based on our stage show. It was super fun. And that show was sold to a network, and this is not new, but it was sold in like a package of 12 things. So it's like a network is like buying, like, I'll buy The Day After Tomorrow, this stand-up special, you know, this series, and like 12 other things. Like, so how do you even equate, like, what, who, like, how do you, when you break up that pie? Yeah, that pie is very small. Like, Day After Tomorrow should get a lot more money than we are. Like, that's $120 million. They got a lot more money to make back than we do.
Wait, but Paul, I remember so distinctly. I worked at American Artist Magazine, which was like at 900 Broadway, like back when you guys were doing Human Giant.
Okay.
And y'all were also in that building.
Oh, is that the one that was like the one right? Yeah, it's the one like right downtown, right?
NYU, right? Yeah. But was that MTV? Because I would always see like one of y'all, you know, you, Aziz, like you.
Naomi,
like,
I got to tell you.
What was there?
Okay. Our office space at Human Giant was wild. Okay, because we first started out we shot the show in LA and New York, and the idea behind that was like a handful of, like, me and Hubel lived in LA, Aziz and Wolner lived in New York, and I just kind of moved out here, and I was kind of being a little bit of a prick about, like, I don't want to just, like, I just moved here, like, I just gave up my apartment, and they were like, we got to shoot New York. But what we kind of found was, oh, if we shot half the show in L.A., half the show in New York, we would get the best of the writers of L.A. and the best of the writers in New York and the best of the talent in L.A. and the best of the talent in New York. It was actually a beautiful idea. I don't know. And because I don't know how financially feasible it was, but it worked. It worked enough. So our first office in L.A. was literally four brick walls. No windows. I've never been in a building without windows. It's in the MTV complex in Santa Monica. We were on the first floor. There was no light. You never knew if it was day, if it was night. No windows. Now, Nick Cannon had his sketch show on the floor above us. All windows. All windows. He would pull up in a Rolls Royce. Lovely guy. But we had no windows. So that was our first weird office space. Then we got moved to a weird building in New York. Also not cool. Just like a very corporate building. Right? Yeah. Okay, corporate, whatever. And then where we moved to that was like the height of corporate. Like, we were like in, it looked like we could have been telemarketers. Like, we just had like half of a floor, and it was, and we were in this building. We knew where the cool bathrooms were. We knew if we went up two flights, there was a better bathroom. And, but it wasn't like, it was kind of like an MTV runoff. Like, there was no other MTV like really around there. It was just like, we had like this, like, it's almost like MTV was like a weird landlord. Like, yeah, I got a half a floor on Broadway and 12th. You want to go use that? And so we kind of just used that. And so it was a weird. Yeah. So it wasn't MTV proper at all. But we liked it because it was downtown. And that show, you know, we slept in those offices. It was insane. It was this insane. But yeah, it was so corporate. And we, you know, and then we're like, you know, having dolphin heads like being transported up and down elevators.
One of my first writing, I guess I could say this now, right? I essentially wrote Cedric's Barber Battle with another guy from UCB. Because what happened was Cedric had hired all his friends who were not writers, and they couldn't do it. So me and this other guy from UCB got hired to write the show, essentially, and they stuck us in a windowless, almost completely dark room where with a, I just remember there being a giant mixer in it. No wow. windows. And to that, sit there.
Like a,
just,
like a music mixer or like a food mixer?
Music mixer.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. I just wanted to make sure.
To churn and then sat there and just churned out page after page of like one-liners about cutting hair and about wherever, whatever city that episode happened to be shot in.
I love those jobs when you don't know better. Like when you don't know better, like, there is like this freedom of that. Like, I mean, I look back, like Best Week Ever was one of the first gigs I had. Now, a lot of people think like, oh, you were on I Love the 80s. And I defiantly say, no, I was not. I was on Best Week Ever. I have like a pride in that. By the way, Best Week Ever also shot in a weird corporate building above Mars 2112.
And you know,
the elaborate studios that they had was, it was like the corner office that a boss would have in a regular building. Those were the Best Week Ever studios. They would just pull down, they had like a big roll of colorful paper and they just pull it down. And then you'd sit in front of it. Like, it was just an office. And, like, you were getting your makeup done in a conference room. Like, it was nothing about it was like, this is a studio. This isn't anything.
Yeah,
there was
yeah.
no snacks. There was no water. There was nothing. It was like, you're just going in there. And yeah. I remember, like, someone saying to me, like, you're rich because you're on TV. I was like, I get paid. My check from Best Week Ever, when I had no agent, I had no anything, was $500. That's it. $500. And I was like, I am living the life. I am rich. But I so was not. And the amount of work that they would make you do is they would send you like a 15-page packet and you have to like write a million jokes. So mm-hmm. every Tuesday night I'd be home going, okay, Ben Affleck and J-Lo broke up. Okay, well, I guess there won't be a Geely 2, you know, whatever. I'm like, you know, just furiously writing like and that job was like 98% was waste and 2% yeah. was used. And you were
right.
like, but you're like, I have it so good. I have it so good.
It's so funny because I did Best Week Ever. Was it Best Week Ever? Like one single time. Literally, they okay. only used one line of mine, but I was mm-hmm. in the teaser.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Never saw a dime, but I didn't have reps. And so I didn't know. Like, I was like, will I get paid? Oh, and I was like, maybe this is just a practice. And then if they like me, I'll get paid. Like, I just never asked. Yeah. I didn't know what to do.
That is
I was on TV. That was good, right?
That was a VH1 special because I swear to God, they would be like, well, we're testing you out. We're not going to pay you yet. They did a lot of that testing people out.
Okay.
Like, you know, and yeah. it was, and yeah. you know, and it, but yeah, you do it. You, of course you do it because you're like, I'm like, I'm excited. Can I put this on my reel? Like,
you know,
like,
you know, I did, honey. It was the opening.
Of course you had. Yeah, yeah, yes.
I love peeling back the sick curtain so people see what this stuff is really
yes.
like.
Well, and then the other thing about that is, truthfully, and this is a theory that I have, and I know this is about relationships and things like this, but
oh,
I will say this.
We'll pivot.
But I will say, people don't watch a goddamn thing. So honestly, when people watch that reel of you, they're like, oh, she's on Best Week Ever. Didn't matter if you were on there 10 times in a row, one second, one clip. And it's like, I said to one of my good friends, I was like, once you take solace in the fact that none of your friends will watch what you do, you will be so much happier. Because if you're waiting for someone to be like, hey, I love that thing. Like, I'm on this show that I love Black Monday. I love working with those people, Cheadle and Regina and Andrew. Like, they're great, the best.
Yasser.
Yasser. Oh, fucking the best. I love Yasser. But I don't know who watches it. I don't think any. I honestly think close personal friends, like close friends of mine, like that you would think like, oh, you would check that out. I haven't heard a word. I haven't heard a word like, oh, I like that show. That was good. Like, and it's just like that weird thing. And I used to be like offended by it. I was like, why does anybody watch my stuff? I'm like, because everyone has 10 friends who are all in like one thing that is important. And then you're mm-hmm. like, I got to watch the things that I want to watch because and if your thing crosses over with the thing I actually like, even better. But
right.
chances are it's not. Like, you know, if I was friends with Bob Odenkirk, it'd be great because I could say, hey, I'm going to call college. Awesome. Michaela Cole, that was great. Oh, my God, I love this show. Like, but I'm not, these are not my friends. So I can't share with them all that sort of stuff.
Okay, but here's how I wanted to pivot, because here's what I'm thinking, right? We're three creatures who are trying our best in this sick business. Mm-hmm. And do you see how quickly we started talking about residuals? Now, you are married to another creative person.
Yes.
Y'all are both in it. You know, it's something Andy and I deal with, of course, you know, doing the pod, and you and June do the pod. Like, you know, how do you separate it? And maybe having the children obviously helps, but, you know, was there anything that you guys set up?
Yeah. And did you, did you have a conversation, or did you kind of just fall? Because I also think improvisers, Naomi's a stand-up, I'm more like an improviser sketch person. And I would think with improvisers, you might just like yes and each other into something without having a conversation.
Well,
you mean bits? Like just
Just do bits. Just do bits. It's all unspoken. You have to read the subtext. I will say this. Let me say this, and because I don't know all the particulars about your relationship, and I don't know the particulars about anybody's relationship, I will tell you what I have found works for me, and how it's been different. I dated somebody for a long time before I was involved with June, and we really like were in each other's business. Like, we improvised together, we wrote together, we did all these things together, to a point where it felt like our careers were slightly intersected, right? Like, it wasn't like we were a duo, but we would always do stuff together. And what I found was, like, we were on vacation. I remember this so distinctly. We were on vacation in London, and it was the first time I'd been in London, and I was so excited to be there. And we were talking, and I felt like this panic come over me, because it's like, oh wait, we should be working on some like work stuff, right? We should and we're like, oh, let's do this, and we were like forcing like this work thing onto our relationship, or at least I look back on it now and go, oh wow, and it wasn't like enjoying the relationship. So I made a very conscious decision: if I ever get involved with somebody who is in this world again, I want to be very cognizant of how I approach that work-life balance. Because what why I'm with that person is not to further my career. It's because that person is my partner, my I want this person to exist outside of that. And so, I think that that June felt that way a little bit too. We talked about it a little bit, and yes, we have crossed paths. And the way that we've done it is, like, when I created NTSF SD SUV, like, I put her in the show. But the reason why, that was a 20-day shoot. I was the writer, or I was the creator of it. I directed episodes, whatever. And it was a 20-day shoot. Our careers were not tied. It was just sort of like, hey, you want to come do this thing? Like, be in this movie. And you're a part of this ensemble. And it just felt like the weight wasn't like, it wasn't all on her shoulders. It wasn't all on my shoulders. And it felt easy.
Yeah.
How did this get made? We didn't know podcasts were ever going to be a thing. And we just kind of started doing it because it came out of like a natural conversation. And it was just this kind of a fun thing to do. But we've kept How Did This Get Made fun. Jason and June, and I say this with all the love in the world, do nothing but show up when it is their time to record and be hilarious. And that's all they fucking need to do. And so I have no ill will about it, but that's the way that we balance that as well. Like, there's no business talk. There's no come do this, or like, it's like, let's book our dates. Let's go do our thing and we'll go. But we make it as easy as possible. So the long story short is, like, yes, we do work together, but we work together in ways that allow us to be our own fully performing person, our own person outside of each other. And in many ways, there are times, like even on the Twitch show, where I'll say to Gino, like, come on and do this thing. And she's like, well, I don't want to, like, we already do the podcast. I don't want to do another thing. and I appreciate that, because it's like, I also feel when you are performing, you're looking to that other person. Like, do they like what I'm doing? Do they not like what I'm doing? Am I funny?
Absolutely.
Am I bad?
Absolutely.
Like, you know, and it's like, and like, we put each other on tape. Those are some of the bigger fights we've gotten into, is putting each other on tape, you know?
Thank you, Paul. This man has notes. And I said, I have a vision for my own character. I don't need it. Okay?
And that's like, and so I've learned how to put June on tape for auditions, and how she puts me on tape. And I want the notes, but I don't want the notes. I want them to be said in a certain way. It's hard. This is the person that I love. This is like my wife, the mother of my children, the person who like brings me ultimate joy no matter what is going on in my life. And so when she goes, I think that you're missing that joke, or I think you should be playing that a little bit more seriously. I feel like a fucking failure. So it is a lot about balance. We would never pass up an opportunity. We work together a lot, but I think we work together in low stakes environments. Like, I would never want to do a movie that was like a two-hander of us where we're a lot, like, maybe I would do that, but it's like, it'd have to be set up in such a way where we both felt really protected, because you know, I want her support when I'm failing, and I want her support when I'm succeeding, but I don't want to be like beholden to, because she's got to be there for me and I have to be there for her. And if we're in it together, we're both being needy and no one's being there for each other, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. It makes sense, Paul Scheer. Okay. Like, I mean, or even like when you wrote me about doing you and Rob's Twitch show, you know, and you were like, you want to come on, or you and Andy can come on. And it's funny because I had this moment, a beat where I was like, well, I can do this myself. But then I was like, you know what? We have our Twitch show together.
Right.
And I knew it was a chill conversation situation that I was like, oh, yeah, we could do that together, because it is important to me, too. I mean, you too. I'm not like saying this like just for me, but it's like we want our own things. And I think especially because I'm more front facing with stand up.
Sure. Yeah.
People do know me more. And it is really important to me where I'm like, me, Andy, his name is not actually Jubu. Can you like go into the world? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I want I don't want it. I don't want to bring him into that necessarily.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, I'm like, I've learned, and I think especially in Quar, right, being around each other nonstop, it's like, oh, yeah, stuff when it's just like, let's just sit and talk or let's do something chill. But if it's more stand up or something like that, it's like, let me do this myself.
Right.
And then when it's a sketch and you're like, will you be in my sketch? And I'm like, yes, I'll say the words. I will not fight about it. Like, I'm like, I don't know what this is, but I will support it.
Well, and that's kind of this balance, and I think it's a constantly evolving thing, because there is something like really fun about podcasts. It is light and fun, and it's like, and it can be very easy. I mean, it shouldn't be that stressful. If it is, you should get out of it. But you know, in a way, you know, because it should be, but that's why I was even reticent to be like, hey, you want to come on? Do you want to come on together? Like, here's options. Like, I don't want to. I'm cognizant of saying, you tell me what's good for you. Like, you know, because it's like, I don't know. I don't know if you want that or you don't want that or what you're trying to do. Because I know that sometimes I think June will feel like, oh, I'm not just his wife. And I also will feel like, and I'm not like, you know, everyone wants to tell me how much they want to, like, you know, how beautiful June is. And I'm like, I appreciate, like, yes, great, she is. Like, you know, like, it's like there are these, you become responsible for somebody else. But it's like, we are in this business of also, like, you guys are never going to be up for the same thing, ultimately, right? Mm-hmm. June and I will never be up for anything. So there's a real direct competition, but it is like, we want to be seen as our own thing, not as a side piece to anyone. And that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's hard. Did y'all meet here in LA or in New York?
We met in New York. We met in New York back in the, I mean, we've been together, oh God, now, like, it's probably over 15 years.
Oh, wow.
Like,
wow.
Yeah. So we've been married for 10, and we have been together for about 15, 16 years. Yeah, I think.
Lord, I had no idea.
Yeah. So I think 2 years ago was our, 2 years ago was our 10th anniversary, 2019. And then, it's in this January, will probably be 16 years. That's crazy. Oh, wow. But it's amazing. And you know, how long have you guys been together?
11. A little over 11 years.
Okay. Oh, so you guys can't be that shocked by me. That like, I mean,
no, but I guess it's like, I didn't know, because it's funny what you're saying about being separate. I like, y'all weren't doing stuff together creatively until maybe the last 5-ish years, right?
Well, I guess longer? Like, yeah, maybe a little. Yeah. Like, whenever NTSF started, like, we've been doing How Did This Get Made for 10 years.
It's been going on for 10 years.
Yeah.
It was the first wave of Earwolf. I remember that so clearly, because it was the first wave of like Earwolf podcasts. And I was like, who charted Comedy Bang Bang?
Yeah, okay, Sklar Brothers. I see. Yeah. But again, that doesn't really count. But I will say, this is what I'm actually really curious about, because 11 years, 15 or 16 years, whatever we are, there's something to be said for, I view us as being young. Right? Like, we've been together with our partner for a long time. And I think what people don't always get, and I want to hear your take on this too, is like, it is a long road full of ups and downs and detours. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm finally getting comfortable with this idea of getting through a period of time. And I think during this pandemic, like before this pandemic, mm-hmm. there was like, I I'm not afraid to say it because it's, I think it's truthful. Like, I think we just had like, June and I had a, it was just sort of like one of those things where it was like metal on metal. We were just kind of scratching each other the wrong way. It was nothing that was like, it was nothing that was catastrophic. It was just sort of like, you were just in a rut, like a little bit of a rut. And that happens sometimes. And I feel like it takes a lot of energy to get through it and not give, again, giving up was not like a part of the option process, but it was like almost,
it could be right. Like, right, yeah, you're in something that for other people could have been.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think what the trick is like the length of the time that you're together is important because you're like, oh, we've been through so much, but it's interesting to see like these relationships take these moments. And because we are people that are growing, we're like trees, like we're, you know, we're constantly evolving and we are on top of each other and we are there. And I think that we're leaving this pandemic probably stronger than we've ever been. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but in the meantime, it's like you can hit these little ruts and it could be because you're depressed. It could be because the other person's depressed. It could be like you're unfulfilled. It doesn't have even to do with the relationship. You're just a human being who has like emotions and sometimes you're just not going to get what you need from her, from that relationship, or you're just mad at that person. Like I have friends that get mad at. Everybody get mad at. Why would this person that I live with 24/7 be that person I get mad at? Like, you know, or feel irritated by. Right. And I feel like people don't often acknowledge that. And I feel like people don't acknowledge that, and people don't acknowledge how hard it is to have a baby.
What we do on our podcast. We talk about. Well, one of our big things, Paul, one of our first taglines was the phrase, gotta miss a bitch. Because Andrew and I both believe the key to making love work is you can't be in each other's face all the time.
You have to separate. The whole thing behind that is you have to have separate stories. You have to go off.
Yes.
Have separate journeys, then come back so you can tell each other about what you experienced.
Absolutely. Like I always envision this image. And maybe as I describe it, it will sound stupid, but I picture, okay, so I picture a mountain and picture Andy, you on one side, Naomi, you're on the other side, and you're both down in the valley and you're doing your shit. You're getting your berries, Andy, you're getting some wood and you're coming up and you're building this campfire, right?
Yes.
But you're both not on the same side of the valley and you're not both, you know, it's not like, okay, anyway, you pick the wood and I'll hold the wood. It's like, no, you're going to get your wood. And you have to go up and then you build your campsite together. And it's important to build together and not just have one person supporting the other person building or waiting on the other person. And that's the same idea. Like the idea of like, you got to go off, you have to do your own thing, come back and then you will make something that is stronger because you both had your own space.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I was like, I think, for instance, for us, you know, this move to LA has been very hard for that very reason.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in New York, you can have a little more balance. You can be pursuing this, but then there's other stuff. Whereas it feels like LA, it's all about it. And it's constantly this question of, am I making it or am I not? Yeah. And then also, for instance, I don't really drive. I have a license, but like, I don't drive. And like, I don't go on the wheel. I'm like, I'm not good at it. And also, like, I just feel like I'm more sedentary. Like, yeah, I go do show before times, of course, like go do shows or whatever. But like, you know, in New York, you could just go and, you know, you just walk subway, bus, whatever. Mm-hmm. And this is always like, well, do I want to get in a lift? Do I want to try to get a ride? I just didn't really do it as much, you know? And
I think the whole thing behind all of this stuff is this. I think about this a lot. I call it the entropy problem. Mm-hmm. It's how much energy do you have? And how are you going to apportion out that energy? Mm-hmm. All right. And if you are, because I think one of the problems with the move to Los Angeles was like all of your energy is going to keeping you out of the depths of despair.
That's true. Uh-huh. That's most of it.
Whereas in New York, you were just on the edge of the depths of despair. You had your legs dangling off the side like in a pool.
Just warming up my toes.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get those toes warm.
So more of your energy is going to there. And I think that makes it more difficult to do other things or to invest like Paul, when you're saying like sometimes like metal against metal, right? And when you're in a relationship for a long time, you have to say like, all right, well, I'm going to put more energy into this to get us through this kind of like time where our rhythms are just off with each other.
Right.
Because that's just, it just happens. Your rhythms just happen to go off each other for a while. And if it's like too long, if it's like years, well, then that's something. Yeah.
Right.
Well, also it's like there's, I don't know if you guys, there's so many things I want to say about this. Like, there's also a part of me that is a bigger believer now in parachuting out of a moment. Like, you know what? Mm. Our rhythms are off. I don't need to fix this right now. I'm going to walk away from it. And you know what? Maybe just by being away for it for 2 hours, it's going to actually remedy itself better than me going, well, what's wrong? Why are we fighting? What's trying to make, like, trying to get to the bottom of it? Like, sometimes, like, just get the fuck out. Sometimes it's just like, it just space. And that, going back to the New York of it all, New York, LA, like, you have an apartment, a house, whatever you are in. That's like your main, that's your home base. In New York, I often felt like the city was an extension of your apartment. Like, you could walk around, go to a coffee shop. Like, you were never far away from being able to go out, go see a movie. Like, everything was at your fingertips. And and there's a space, like, so no matter if you lived in a studio, you could go out and feel like you're not trapped. And in LA, it's different. I know everyone's financial things are drastically different, so I'm not trying to be like advocating this. But I will say that if you can, I think it's very important to find an apartment or a place where you are, where you have two separate spaces to work, to do your thing. Like, so it's like, you got your desk, I have my desk, and we can go off into our own corners. It could even be on opposite sides of the room, but our headphones are in, or, you know, we could like wall off a little bit. Because one of the best things that ever happened to me was we found this apartment out here, and thank goodness, going back to what we talked about in the beginning, the woman was a Best Week Ever fan, so I think she let us like skip to the front of the line. We found this amazingly cheap apartment that was, it was three bedrooms. It was like $1,200. It was like ridiculously cheap. It was like insane. It was absolutely insane. And, but it was a great, like, oh, it was like we had a guest room, and June had an office, but the guest room is also my office. It was just like, we just had a door to close. Doors to close are important. And you, and I know you may look at it and go like, I don't have X amount of money. And I look, and this is these are different problems for different people. So I'll say, like, but if you can, that door to close, that extra money for that door to close will pay off giant dividends in your life.
In your life.
Like, you will make that money back. Like, that, you're not saving any money by not having that extra door to close. If you can, if it's closer, you're considering it, go spend a little bit more and close
or
that
fucking
door.
Or even a screen, honey. If you can screen off something and say, this is my time. Because I think what you're saying, I mean, because you do that with your AirPods. Like, you kind of put, because you're pretty good at tuning out in general. Yeah. Meaning, not like in a bad way, but like, you know, get in your zone and do it. Whereas, like, I'm like so fucking easily distracted because I don't want to work. And so I'm constantly just like, what you reading?
Right.
What you feeling? Like,
oh, it's
just like so like, terrible. And like, that, I'm like, oh, I need to get out of the house. I need to like go to a physical location. You know, a couple times I had done in our old apartment where I was like, that like Bolt coffee spot. What I like to do when I know I need to work, go to like a coffee place, do not bring your laptop charger. Because then you've got a finite amount of time. And it's like, I really only have 2 hours to get this going.
Right.
Or else the battery's
gonna
die.
That's good. Okay, I like that.
And it makes me like focus.
You need a countdown clock. You need like a bomb. Like it's like Die Hard 3.
But there is something good. I agree with like that idea. Like sometimes working in a coffee shop, which, you know, it's like, of course, everyone does it, but it's like there is something about it. Like the internet's never going to be that great, right? So you can't like you can't just like start like streaming shit, like, you know, like, you know. So you are like kind of forced to, you know,
behave.
Like like to kind of like wall yourself off, and you just have a harder time doing that in your apartment because you can like go to the kitchen, get a pretzel, go over here, give that person that you're with like a hug or kiss, like, you know, you're finding all those like little things. But it's so important to be like, to find those, that time to actually focus and build that in. I think it's hard to find that time. Yeah,
you definitely have to. But then also when you're working, one of the things we do that our couples therapist had to like tell us is like we have business hours. Like after 6 p.m., we don't talk about, do we book it? Do we get any, meaning like, do we book the cop pod? Do we have an email?
Yes.
What's it?
Or even scheduling things are not done verbally. We G-chat each other or we email each other for scheduling things.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Like, that is the thing that you, like, that's the that's the right way to do it, I think, because it's like it's not getting into your private time. Like your private time should be like you can vent about your own shit, you can vent about whatever, but like as you would do with anything, but you're not booking, making, you're not relying on each other to fix a work problem like in that way. Yeah, I love that. I love.
I think the thing that what's so difficult about this business, or maybe it's business in general, I don't know, I haven't been in any other real businesses, but like is the intertwining of all these different modes of being, right? So for especially if you're in a couple, right? Or but even with your friends, but like romantic or friendship gets coupled with creativity, gets coupled with business
and capitalism.
But I think my strong suspicion is that business stuff is the thing that like really starts to like warp this. That like you or like you can maintain, maybe it's more that like you can maintain two of these things pretty well, and it's the third one that's always where it's going to be metal on metal.
I'm just
throwing that out there. I didn't give it any thought beyond.
No, I like what you're saying. Like, I think what I have something that's I feel like is similar, which is I know what I want to create. I don't know if I'm always successful at it, but if what I want to create is, no matter how shitty my day is, no matter how low I feel, and this is on the negative side of it, or honestly, like if I had a great day, I want to build my family time as like, oh, thank God I have my family. I don't want to look to my family as a validation of that part of my life. The family, I want my family to be the validation of the me, the person. Like if everything was stripped away from me, I still have my sons and my wife, and I can feel like love and comfort there. I have more than that, but I can come home to them, you know. And if you get like, and that, and so I've really been trying to focus on that. Like, so we have like a built-in end of day is business hours, because at 5:30, our nanny leaves. We go have dinner, then it's bath time, then it's, you know, it's a whole rigmarole, then it's like reading stories and bedtime. So like we are from 5 to like 8:30, 8:40. It is just accounted for. Like, so kids are amazing at stopping you from being focused on your shit, doing your shit, and for good and for worse.
That's why I think I should have one. Yeah. But that's not a good reason, really. Because that's my only reason. I'm like, maybe I need some balance. Should I have a baby?
But by the way, I'm gonna tell you a couple things about that. You're not far off. I don't think it's a terrible idea. Because it actually does open you up to so much more stuff, but it also... I think the one thing I learned, the piece of advice I will pass on forever, is no one is 100% ready to have a child. And if you are, something is wrong. Because what you're saying is, all right, and what I mean by that is like, if you're 100% ready to have a child, then you have no conception of what a child is. Because a child is going to fuck up your shit, right? and it's going to mess it up. And if you have not considered that, and you're not hesitant about that, you should not have a child. But like I always feel like if you can get to about 65 to 70%, like I want to have a kid, I think that's the right zone. Because you're like, you are essentially saying, I'm giving up my lifestyle. I'm giving up and one of the dumbest things I've said, this is like, it's so dumb and people make fun of me when I say it, but I think it's the only way I can kind of describe it is like, before we had a kid, I remember, you know, I was home alone. June was working or whatever she was doing. And I was like, I'm going to go get like a yogurt. There's like a Froyo place on the street. I go get a yogurt. But now when I have a kid, the kid's sleeping, I want to go get a yogurt. I'm like, oh, I can't leave the house now. I can't just like casually walk down the block anymore. And it's like, I know Postmates and bullshit, but it's like, but the idea being like that moment of like, oh,
something
right now I have
simple.
To like, everything is now here. Like nothing is simple. Like all the easiest things that we've ever done. Oh, go see that movie at this time. Oh no. And like, and you'd be insane to be like, I want to do that. No one wants to do that. Like, you could be like, I love a kid. I can't wait to be a parent. I love my husband. I love my wife. I love my partner. Whatever it is, you could have all those feelings. But if you don't acknowledge, I remember what somebody said to me. They're like, when you have a kid, I'm going to look at you and we're going to share a moment because we're both going to know something that not many people know. Only people who have kids know. And I was like, yeah, I got this. I'm fine. And I'm the 65, 70% person. And when I saw him after I had the kid, I was like, you were right. Yeah, now I know exactly what you're talking about. I get it. Like, I get it. And it's like, it's a secret, like a weird secret society. But it's a great one. But it is like, yeah, that's all. I mean, it's, you know, it's, but
I'm
it is
only
a
at
great
like
balance.
20%, 30 when I really just want to give up on the business. That's just mad. Like, I know, like, I don't have the temperament for it. I think
right.
I'm already anxious. I already need too much sleep just to function. Like, I would much be like, mommy needs her dolls. It would be a Valley Dolls mother situation, and I know I shouldn't do it.
You already have, like, a baby's temperament.
I do, like, irritable. I'm, like, restless.
Irritable, need a lot of naps.
Right. So I'm like,
just want to eat.
I couldn't. But then there
and
are
by the way, I'm also not one of those people who are like, everyone should have a kid.
Right.
Do
of course,
what
you, understand.
You want to do. Yeah, exactly. And now the only reason why I want people to have kids is because then I'll have people that will have a similar schedule and could be like, can we just like, do you know a place where there's a fucking climbing wall? Like, okay, great. We can go there. Like, you know, it's just, it gives me more options for people to hang out with on a Saturday. But besides right. that's really the only reason.
Well, like, we will hang with people with kids. It's funny, because I think you're very good at it, because you will just kind of be on the kids' level.
Sure.
Like, I know, like, you have a high patience, a high tolerance for, like, repetition. You know what I mean? Like, there's some, like, we were hanging out with some kid, and she literally would not stop. She would just go, hi, Andy. And then Andy would go, hi, Nora. And he did this for 30 minutes with this girl. And I'm sitting there going, I'm trying to have a conversation. So if you guys could just pipe down with that. And then, but you're good, or like you were like playing.
Well, it was a Meisner exercise.
That's yeah, true. You were really like, working on the craft.
What are you doing? I'm eating an apple. What are you doing? I'm digging a hole. What are you doing? Like they're that acting exercises.
Yeah. But it's like, he's like, you have the patience to like do it. And I think but I do. I get a little sad when like I was talking to somebody. She's like, oh yeah, we're trying to have a baby. And in my head, I was like, oh. I'm not going to see you no more.
I know. Yeah, I know. And it takes about you basically eat shit for about like 2 years. And then, okay, like I feel like you eat shit for 2 years in the sense that the first 6 months, no one tells you how hard it is. And then it starts going exponentially better. And then like 9 months, you're like, oh, this is great. Then 12 months, you're like, okay, I got it. And then like and then you're kind of back to normal. And then that second year, you're like, okay, yeah. And then like you just say it's like, you know, like getting an injury, like you gotta like work it back, and you're in it, and then you figured out all your nanny situations. You know that they're gonna sleep at this time. You get in, and like not to say that we didn't have any fun in that time, but those are the years where you're kind of like figuring it out. I think, unless you're like just like drop him off at a nanny and be like, you raise my kid, and I'll see you later. And by the way, I've seen that happen too. So
This is L.A. Of course.
Yeah.
Half the children are being raised by someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, again, it's this thing about energy. It's like, because look, this is a complete analogy. I'm not comparing the two things, but when we first when quarantine started and we first for real were like, oh, we're gonna be in this for a while.
Yeah.
And we migrated again. Dumb analogy. We migrated our live show that we did monthly to Twitch. Okay. And I had to relearn everything. In fact, why don't we just expand this so it's not just about that? When we started quarantine, we had to relearn how to live our lives inside our apartment.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
And everything changed. And I remember those first, how tiring it was those first couple months to learn how to do all this stuff. Learn how to like do this thing online that we're doing. Learn how to, now we're doing this podcast on Zoom, like all this kind of stuff. Now I have to clean all my groceries or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And that took an inordinate amount of energy. Same thing when we first got Mabel. It took a lot of our dog.
Yeah.
It took a lot of energy to learn the rhythms, because I was a cat person before that. Learn the rhythms of a dog and learn how to take care of a dog, right? Now, so it's, I would say with a child, it probably is exponential from those things where it's like your life is now totally rearranged. You have this new relationship with this person you've created, and you have to relearn everything from the ground up. Every one of your relationships has changed, and now all your energy is going into learning how to relive your life with this new relationship in it.
And I'll add one other part of it that's really complex too, which is like you have to learn how to parent together, because you know, that's like, you both are separate people. June and I are separate people, mm-hmm. and we take care of our own life and our own shit in our own way. But then you have to take care of this thing that you both want. And ownership is a weird term, but you want to be like, oh, no, I want to instill this. I want to do this. This is how I'm going to do this. And you have to find that balance of when to push, when to pull, when to step up. And so I think, you know, June and I have, both of us have pretty alpha tendencies. Mm. And what we have found, and this is maybe through the improv yes ending of it all, is we divide responsibilities, and that's what we do. I don't get in her shit, and she doesn't get in my shit. So, like, for example, we have a birthday coming up for my oldest son, who's going from 6 to 7, and June does the party. Like, June does the cake. She does the thing. I know not to ask. I know not to question. I know not to, like, the only thing I say is, yes, great, amazing. I love it. Mm-hmm. And even though I just said that to you, I made a mistake the other day because we were talking about something, and she was talking about this cake that she was making. And I was like, oh, that cake's going to be amazing. And I was like, you know, but if we're going to have some people over, because we have a small pod and we are vaxxed now, I said, we should do some cupcakes too, because I know it's like a weird thing to be blowing out. And she's like, I'm making a cake. And I was like, and I'm done. And I'm out. You got it. You got it, honey. You're making a cake. And I was like, yeah, COVID be damned. You know, like, and because, like, you know. And but like I know that that's where her domain is, and my domain is in different ways. And I'm not one of those dads who are like, I don't know what the fuck they're doing. You know, like, we are, you know, like, we've gotten into a system now where our kids are like I was saying earlier, one of our kids is in first grade, one of our kids is in preschool. The first grade kid has to be dropped off at 8 a.m., the preschool kid at 9 a.m. The preschool kid, you got to drive. The first grader, you can drive, but it's better just to walk. But for all of this to function in the morning, at night, I make the lunches, I fill the water bottles, I set the table for breakfast, I do the whole thing. So then I'll sleep in a little bit more, June wakes up, gets the kids dressed, and then they walk out the door. Like, we get each other, we just find the holes for each other, and then we make our days easier, I hope. I mean, but it's a constant balance of, like, what you want, what I don't want, how do I want to do this, what do you want them to do, what do you know, video games, do they play, do they not, how long do they play?
Yeah, you were saying June
watch?
Hates video games.
You, hates I remember. Them. But she's okay with them playing them now. I think we've beaten her down. But she she will walk out of the room, like, you know, walk out of the room when they are on. And but I make sure that we just, like, play Mario video games. Yeah. And Mario video games are super easy and they're fun. And, like, we're not doing Minecraft and we're not doing, you know, like, whatever, you know. Yeah, June is more serious than I am. Sorry, I'll shut up in a second. June is more serious because she goes, like, my son loves the NBA, and I love basketball, and we talk about basketball all the time. And my son said to me at one point, he's like, who is the worst player in the NBA? And I'm like, I don't know. And I'm just, like, in my head, like, I'm going, like, Javaris Crittenden. And he's like, oh, why Javaris Crittenden? And, like, what I really remember from Javaris Crittenden is that he, like, brought a gun into the locker room. Like, that's really what I remember, right? And I go, well, you know, he was he was drafted pretty good, and he didn't really play well at all. And he brought a gun. Like, I was like, and he was kind of mean to his teammates. Like, that's what I would say. He's mean to his teammates.
Yeah.
And then he's like, but why? What did he do? What did he do? What did he do? And so after, like, a week of what he do, I was like, well, he brought a gun into the locker room, right? And he goes, and I'm like, that's going to end it. Now, Jafar's Crittenden story is a little bit more complex than that because he also, and I'm not. Forgive me for not fact-checking this right now. I've tried to eliminate it from my head. I believe Javaris killed his wife. He's currently in jail for over 30 years. And so I was leaving that part of the story out. I was like, I don't need to talk to him about this man killing the mother of his child. That's not there. So I just like, yeah, gun. He had a gun. It was weird. So all of a sudden, wakes me up at like 6 in the morning one day. He's like, Dad. Mom just told me Javaris Crittenden killed a woman. And I'm like, yeah, she's right. He did. I wasn't going to tell you that because I don't think your little brain can handle it, but I guess, yeah. And then, like, June, like, he loves Allen Iverson. June's like, well, you want to hear what some of the things he said in the rap song? And I was like, and so he's like, he said these really offensive things. I'm like, okay, yeah. I'm like, so I don't know where, like, so I'm like, I always decide, I'm like, other kids, they should know. And June's like, no, they're gonna know. And she's making them really smart and feeling like she's creating a level of empathy. But it's like, so yeah, those are the funny, weird things that we can't, like always lock into, because I'm like, I want to not protect them, but I play definitely with kid gloves. And then he comes in and drops some knowledge on me. I'm like, oh, okay.
Good to know, because I was, you know, I did clock the fact that you have two Caucasian males, you know.
Yes.
You tell me a birthday's coming up, I'm going to get some bell hooks for babies. Maybe get a little Audre Lorde. I'll wrap that up for the eldest. We got to work on them early. We got to work on them early.
And you know what? It's something that I truly, I hate this, like, ever, like, be too cavalier about this, but there's been so much that has gone on to push so many issues forward in the last 2 years. I'm so proud and excited to be a parent in this time, because I feel like I'm working on myself, and I can really trickle down to my children and really create a dialogue that my parents never had with me, and that I really enjoy having with my kids. And that, and you know, and there are these amazing things like with the George Floyd, there was a special Sesame Street episode, about that. Or there's pandemic Sesame Streets, and like, not that they don't even care about it. Like Sesame Street, they hate Sesame Street, but I'll put it on, and that will be like, we can find ways to talk about things. We can find ways to make things, like, we talk about police and we talk about police brutality and we talk about, you know, these issues. And to me, it's like, how do I present it in a way that's truthful, but not too specific, right? I don't think he needs to know all the details, but we can talk about, look, you're told in class to trust the police, but here's another side of this, and here's what's going on in our community. And he, you know, he has an uncle who is who's Chinese and is a close uncle. And we talk about that. So it's a matter of like finding what the 6-year-old brain can handle and introducing it. So it's like, because I honestly feel like I was a sheltered kid. Like when I was like gay people. Like when I was like 12. Like what? I didn't know that existed. Like what is this? You know? And it's so wild. But like that was the kind of the sheltered life that I live. And like Gus has friends who have two dads or two moms or single. There's so much more out there. So yes. So long story short, you're right. Like we need to get in early. We need to make sure that there's empathy. We need to make sure that there's education. We need to make sure that there are conversations and that we're putting goodness into the world and that, but more than goodness, smart kids into the world who are cognizant about what the fuck is going on.
Right.
And you can up it. You can always plus up the knowledge, but we got to start with the right base. And and so that, you know, so in the grand scheme of things, we're trying. We don't take it lightly, and June definitely doesn't take it lightly. It's not a battle, but it's a constant
struggle.
Struggle to be like, well, yeah, to be like, well, it's like, how do you do, like, what do you do? Like, what do you do to make it make sense, but not be scary? Right.
Yes.
Cause it's like, because there was a time and we fucked up because we didn't fuck up. But again, we watched the NBA all the time, and a lot of the commercials during the NBA were like, they were these like PSAs. It was, you know, Black Lives Matter PSAs. And it was like these very intense images, and it's commercials to commercial breaks. And like, we're having these conversations. And I think there was a moment where like our son got really scared of the police, and we have to go, like, how do we also protect the, like, you're safe. How do we keep them like feeling that they're safe?
Right.
But also knowing what's going on. And that's and that's the balance, right? Because it's like, I literally told a story to my youngest son the other night, and it was like, I was telling a story about him. I was like, and he ate, like, I was like, he made a fart so big that he became a big giant monster. And then he was like, I'm scared of the story. I'm like, you're scared of the story where you're a giant monster? Like, I'm like, there's no, like, and like, so you have to, like, you always forget, like, oh, how is this? I don't know why this is scary. You're running around farting around a city. And he's like, that story really scared me. I'm like, oh, like, I'm like, I thought this was like an easy story. So you don't know. Like, that's all. Like, it's, that's the balance that I think is always a struggle, is how to keep them. Yeah, you know, they're little. They're little.
Yeah, they're little.
You know, and but it's good to,
So at 6 years old, you can find out when somebody has killed their wife. At 4 years old, you cannot even be a fart monster.
That's a tricky balance. That's a tricky balance.
2 years makes a big difference. 2 years makes a big difference.
I mean, all we had when I was a kid was the that Transformers episode about the Iran-Contra hearings. It was real.
But, I, but you know what? Like,
when Starscream was selling cocaine to pay for weapons for
weapons.
Iran.
Oh my God. Now, but, Paul, yeah. Paul, yes. Do you have time for one question?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. Whatever you got.
All right. Why don't we take a quick break?
Sorry to go. I feel like I got very serious there for a second.
No, I loved every second.
It was absolutely lovely, which is why we just kept talking.
I know.
Why don't we take a quick break and we'll be right back after that.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey y'all, let me talk to you for a minute about underwear. Yes, that's what I want to talk about. Now, I don't know about you, but my underwear drawer is the Wild West. I've got 12 different brands, 4 different fits, half of it ain't comfortable. I don't even know where I got most of them. I open my underwear drawer in the morning and I'm like, what do we have here? And these are items I purchased for myself. How did I let it get so bad? How? Well, I'm telling you right now, I am getting myself together with the help of MeUndies. Now that I've felt the buttery soft comfort of MeUndies, they're all I'm reaching for in the underwear drawer. I got the cheeky briefs. This is the ones I bought. The cheeky briefs in a fun tartan plaid print. And I'm addicted. I'm addicted. They're made from sustainably sourced beechwood fiber and have a flexible, no-roll waistband that keeps them in place all day long. Thank you. Comfort and fashion. There are so many undies to choose from all black classics to fun, expressive prints. MeUndies has a look for everyone, and they come in sizes ranging from extra small to 4XL, guaranteeing a flattering cut for every body. Thank you, MeUndies, for the range. MeUndies' signature fabric is as soft as a warm hug. It's breathable. It's stretchy. It's ideal for all-day wear. And if you're listening to this right now and you're saying, okay, Naomi, I have enough underwear, well, guess what? MeUndies isn't just about underwear. Explore the lounge collection featuring comfy joggers, hoodies, onesies, and more. And they even have an activewear collection called Move Me, which is the softest activewear on the market. So get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/therapy. That's MeUndies.com/therapy for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in. Hey y'all, wanted to pop in real quick and let you know that if you like what you hear and you want to support the show, there are a couple different ways.
Most of our support comes from our wonderful Patreon community. For $5 a month, you get 2 bonus episodes of just us mostly spilling the tea and occasionally searching for crazy bread in Los Angeles, plus lots of other bonus content. We love our page pals, and we couldn't do this without you. And if you want to join, go to patreon.com/couplestherapypod.
We also have merch, which includes Gotta Miss a Bitch and Jubu t-shirts, yeah, which you can find in the link tree in our Twitter or Insta bios.
And for absolutely $0, you can rate and review the show on Apple.
5 stars, please. It'll only take 10 seconds, and it helps us tremendously. Okay, that's it. We love you deeply. Now back to the show. And we're back. We got Paul Shea Honey, and he's going to help us handle your scandal. And
right.
Yes, as always, you guys, you can hit us up, DM us, Couples Therapy Pod on Instagram, Naomi and Andy on Twitter, CouplesTherapyPod@gmail.com. But you know, I love your voicemails. The voicemails make me the happiest.
Oh, the voicemails are the best. I have them on How Did This Get Made, and they make me so happy.
323-524-7839. Come on. Give us a call.
Do it. Paul, by the way, can I ask you guys a question?
Sure. Yes.
You talked about what your couples therapist told you about, like, the business hours. Does your couples therapist know you do this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He listens. Okay. We shout him out.
He's listened to his podcast. He's listened to my podcast.
I I felt like I have, I was talking to somebody, a psychiatrist, and she just subtly dropped on me that she was like, she's like, you know, I have a podcast. And I was like, I didn't even know how to take it. I was like, are you inviting me to listen to it? She's like, I had someone on the show the other day, and da, da, da. I was like, and now I'm like, do I Google it? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what to do with this information. It was too much because I feel like I don't know anything about my therapist. So like when I get like there's my therapist who I love so much. I don't know a goddamn thing about her. I don't know. Like, and every now and then I'll be like, okay, that fills in the puzzle. Like I said something the other day. I was like, oh, my son went back to school. She's like, oh, LAUSD's back in school. I was like, okay, you don't have kids. All right, because you would know that. You would know that school's back. I was like, are you married? I can't quite figure it out.
That's so funny. No. I love to know about my therapist. I'm always asking them about their business.
Yes. Yeah. Our couple therapists we know a lot about. Yeah.
He's open. Our couple therapist is open. I've had some therapists before who was like, why are you asking? You know, like they want to kind of keep that in. And I'm like, and then I had like one who was a little more open again, like only in, you know, within reason. It's not like she was like telling me business, but I asked because, you know, when I'm talking about certain issues, I want to know what you know about them. So for instance, when I was like, you know, I was like, you know, dealing with creative stuff or dealing with this kind of feeling of what the fuck am I doing? And this makes no sense. And I was like, well, have you ever, you know, pursued something that wasn't like a straight line?
Have you ever gotten an overall deal, therapist?
Like I asked her that and I remember her saying, well, she was like, you know what? I used to be a dancer and I've actually only been a therapist for 7 years. And I was like, okay, now we can get into it. Tell me your advice.
And it's so interesting to me because my mom is incredibly well-educated, really after the age to be educated, right? Like she just went to school for like 20 years after having a career. And my mom just recently went to therapy after her husband died. And she was like, she says to me, she's like, oh my God, I gotta tell you, therapy is so amazing. I go, Mom, you were a fucking therapist. You ran a family therapy in our house. And she's like, oh, yeah, I know, but it's different. I'm like, it's different? Like, what do you mean it's different? It's like a mechanic going like, oh, wow, you know, people can actually fix cars. Like, that was your job. What do you mean? Why are you surprised? Like, you should not be surprised that this thing that you did works. Like, you're like, what?
She's like, I was just talking. I didn't really know.
I know. Like, that. It really just made me, like, think back of all of her patients going like, what were they getting out of that? Anyway, so yeah.
Oh, maybe she was just cynically running it. She's like, "Oh, this is paying so much."
Like, yeah.
Who cares what happens to my clients?
Oh my! I'm fascinated.
I'm a therapist though because I have opinions. Like, if you just ask me what I think you should do with your life, I will tell you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, sure.
Yes, I know that well.
I will say it. Okay. We have to get this voicemail.
Yeah, sorry.
Hey, Andy and Naomi, I'm Emily calling from San Francisco. And I need your advice. A little background. I was in a cultic religion for my whole life, and I escaped this last year when I was told by my ex that he wanted a divorce. And I fled, and I was able to break the chains, the last few chains of that cult and that marriage, and I'm done. I've moved across the country. I'm rebuilding. Things are going pretty well. My question is this. Pennsylvania is a terrible state to get divorced in, and I am wondering, it's been really hard to get a lawyer who can represent me well. I'm wondering if I should just walk away from this terrible guy and the potential money that I could get if I fought for like a little bit more alimony or whatever, or if I could just like say, I'm done. I'm leaving whatever potential money there is on the table and just walking away. Maybe it's $800 or $1,000 a month in alimony moving forward. Maybe we split the proceeds from a house if, you know, that we've owned for a couple of years and have very little equity in. You know, there's not a ton of money there, but it would potentially be steady money moving forward. I'd love to hear what you think. Is it worth the money or the mental health and the freedom? I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Wow. Wow. Okay, I didn't expect that. This one's
This is a big one.
This is huge. Okay, first of all, Emily, congratulations for getting out of the cult.
Yeah.
Emily, absolutely. You're out. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Amazing. And I know it wasn't easy. Oh my God. Very proud
but
of you.
But I would imagine, and I have a couple of, not similarities, but I can speak to a couple things there. I would imagine getting out of a cult, you are cutting yourself off from a giant community, mm-hmm. probably some financial issues. She said alimony. Now, child support and alimony are different things, right? I just want to make sure. I'm just formulating my thoughts here.
I know, I was thinking the same
here.
Thing, because it's like, well, what do you, but at the same time, yeah, it's true. It's like, depending on the nature of that cult, you know, does Emily have, job history, right? Like, is it going to be easy for her to kind of go in there? Was this a situation where, as a wife, she had to stay in the home or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we don't know what this cult was.
Exactly.
Right. Where
in Pennsylvania?
Where in Pennsylvania? Well,
Amish?
Oh, well, she said she moved across to Pennsylvania. Wait, so
she's in San Francisco now.
She's in San Francisco now.
Yeah. She moved to San Francisco.
Well, I don't know anything about jurisdiction and divorce. Could she? Could it not be based?
You can move. You can move. You can't. If she had a child, I think it would have been harder for her to move to San Francisco because there is an issue about moving out of state.
With
a kid. So I think you can live wherever you want with a divorce.
But she's
got to get divorced in this. You got to get divorced in the state that you are married in.
Oh, okay.
Right. That lawyer has to file the paperwork and do whatever there. But again, she's in San Francisco, so I'm sure it's always harder when you're not there too, because then she's got to like make phone calls and try to find somebody who's around. I think when she says, is this worth it? $800 to $1,000, certainly in Pennsylvania, if it's not a big city.
Yeah.
She can make, that's a good chunk of change.
Right.
That's a good chunk of change.
But she's in San Francisco now.
Oh, right. She's in San Francisco now. So that really won't buy her anything.
That'll pay for like maybe groceries for a week.
But I think it all depends on, how hard is it going to be to fight? Is this man being difficult, right? Is he vindictive? Is he, some people divorce and it's like, fine, sign the paper, take the money. Other people are like, I'm going to make you fight tooth and nail for every dollar.
Well, and I don't know what the cult is, and you don't know what kind of lawyers the cult has to make it more difficult for her.
Right.
There are a couple things that I feel like, look, my mom left her husband that was not my father, but like her husband, but my stepdad, I guess. And I just found out this happened, God, I mean, ages and ages ago, like when I was like in fourth grade. So I just found out just a couple of weeks ago that she didn't ever get any money from that divorce. She just got the fuck out. And he was supposed to, like when he sold the house, he was supposed to give her some money. He still had some of her furniture and he never did. I think when you are leaving an abusive or a problematic relationship, it is probably best to just be like, I don't give a fuck. Because even getting those support payments, you may get a court to say that they have to pay you,
but they may not do it. Yeah.
I have a very good friend who has a daughter. They had a child together. He fucking took off when she was like one or two, moved to Hawaii, never sent alimony, like then once sent a little bit, but had a whole other family and was providing for them, all this shit. And she had to, like, she eventually got legally emancipated from him because he just was a fucking deadbeat. So like, just because you sign something doesn't mean you'll get the thing. And you don't even know about like the house sale. Maybe they'll undersell it. Maybe the cult will buy. There's a million ways that you could. It may just be not worth the headache. And what are we talking about? Did you marry a millionaire? Or like, what's the windfall that we're talking, like, that we
well,
are
she's
talking
saying it's
about?
It's not much, right? Because she's like, well, it's a house. We had it. She's like $800 to $1,000 a month. You know, again, not nothing. We're never going to say nothing. But at the same time, as Paul is saying, I agree. It's like, if this was like that, to the point where you're like, I'm free. I've broken the chains. It's like you use those phrases. Yeah, you might just want to,
It's really fucked up how, like, the power, when you are dealing with a power imbalance and trying to get money out of them. Like, my parents, the contractor, what my parents, it's just so when I say contractor, like, we have a very middle class home in Pennsylvania. it's nothing ostentatious or anything like that. But they had someone, they like, they saved
Look, you're
going
to have
for...
a contractor if you want to put a deck in. Like, you know, that doesn't have to be a big thing. Okay. Anyone who's going to do any building is a contractor. Yeah, yeah. You're contracting them to do some labor. Yeah.
But he, like, fucked up the house. So they mm-hmm. they saved up for decades, had a house built, and like, he didn't put sump pumps in, and our basement flooded. He just fucked up the driveway. It was all messed up. And my dad, I remember asking him, like, are you going to sue him? And my dad's like, it's not worth it. He has so much more money than we do. He'll drag it out forever. And we'll spend more money on lawyers than we will getting anything back. And I think sometimes it's, as much as it sucks living in this world like this, like, you have to suck up the injustice of it just to, like, get free of something shitty.
Can I bring it all the way back to where we started, residuals, and say, and say, like, sometimes in this business, you will get a lawyer who will get you out of a deal because they're asking for all this stuff that doesn't make a lick of difference in sense. It's just so they can say, I got you this thing that will never amount to anything. It's like, and they'll make you walk away from a deal for things that are nonsense. And I feel like that's what lawyers are bad lawyers can do. You know, like, they can, because they have nothing else to do but fight and be weirdly vindictive, and you don't know what you're getting into. So unless you, maybe you're on this podcast, and maybe you are on this podcast, and some lawyer maybe hears it and goes, I'm in Pennsylvania, and I'm a good divorce lawyer, and I'm going to take on your case. Like, and they want to do it, and they want to do it for you. Sure. But at the same time, like, they're just sticking around. You got to pay for it. And it, like, if you got to pay for it, and they got to, how many hours are you paying to get this person? And you're never going to get, like, we just don't know the variables. It's like, you're in San Francisco. You've already gotten there. Start your life fresh. And you know, if you can, which I think you can, San Francisco seems pretty open to, I mean, there's a lot of cults in San Francisco, so be careful. But but I do feel like that's a better spot to be in, I think.
Yeah.
Just to be, like, fresh and clean, sign it.
That's true.
But sign something, because you need to make sure he can't take a credit card out in your name. You need to make sure that if you find somebody else and you're going to get married, that 12 years from now, 5 years from now, you know, you're not going to be like, some court's going to be like, well, hold on, you actually are married. You get something signed as soon as possible. Yeah. That's what you do need.
If there is a lawyer listening that has pro bono hours,
a good divorce attorney
with some pro bono hours that wants to throw them towards our caller, please reach out to us.
Reach out to us, and we'll connect you to Emily. Okay, but also,
I forgot what the B was. So just that.
Yeah, but
just
also like get free.
Get it signed.
Yeah.
Get it signed. Get something signed. Either way, like, because you need to. You just need to make sure that he doesn't buy another house in both of your names.
Oh God!
Right, like, you know what I'm saying? Like you are, if you are still married in the eyes of, you know, not to be scary. Again, I'm trying to. I don't know how old she is. She may be 4. She may be 7. You know, so I don't know. But right. I want to judge my how scary should I be? But but you want to be careful. You do want to be careful about that kind of stuff, because if this person is duplicitous in any way, they could do something that could wreck your credit, could fuck you up, and so you got to just protect yourself on that level.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah, I remember B, by the way. The money you will spend on a lawyer will probably be more than the money you would get in alimony.
Yes.
Yeah, and also there's no guarantee that he will actually give you the
alimony. No guarantee, so.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. Do you know that's why people tend to go on those judges' shows? You know, like Judge Joe Brown or Judge whatever, because the way those shows work, if you win, you get the money. The show gives you the money. So a lot of times you're looking at people like, why are you doing this on TV? Because that is your guarantee, because basically the show will put that initial money out.
Got it. So basically that's like their performer fee is like, okay, that's why they're taking like small claims. So they're probably like, all right, like it's all going to probably be like under $10,000 or some version of that. And then it's a 50-50 chance that they're going to pay off on that. So they probably only pay off on half the things. And I wonder if there's a little whisper to the judge, like, hey, we're a little bit over this month. So not guilty. I love it. This has been so fun to chat with you both.
So great. Thank you so much for coming through.
An absolute delight.
Being so open.
My pleasure.
All right.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.